Today's opening tip, Zach LaVine threw it down last night, and rookie Denny Avdija did not exactly contest it. Perk, would you have done the same thing here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That just means that Denny has done his scout report, and he know not to jump with Zach LaVine. His centers in the league know that. I wouldn't have.
Yeah, you would not let a rookie get away with that, Perk. The rookie has to get on the poster. That's the way it works.
Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols, joined by NBA champ Kendrick Perkins. Woo! Our insider New York Times bestseller, live from the Cobra Dome, Brian Windhorst. Guys, I'm a little upset that there was not mayonnaise in that bucket, that they just dumped water. I feel a little cheated, but I'm going to go on. We're going to go on here. Coming up in the show, on his 36th birthday, we're going to ask how long LeBron can continue to be at or near his prime. You'll want to hear Perk's response on this one. First, though, it's just one game. We're hearing that a lot around the NBA right now as teams struggle to find their footing after the shortest offseason in history. Hey, so we lost by 20, won by 40, whatever, it's just one game. Which is true, except one game doesn't mean what it used to. In this shortened season, every outing is one of 72, not one of 82. Which is why when, say, Ja Morant is projected to be out 3 to 5 weeks with an ankle injury, it's all that much more devastating for a team like Memphis. It's also why, in Philadelphia, even just the second week of the season, it feels like there's an invisible James Harden-shaped ticking clock over the Sixers' heads. Will Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers be better than their predecessors at putting Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons in position to flourish together? Or at some point, some number of games in, will it be time to push the button on a train for a certain bearded gentleman from Houston? The Sixers did seem to do the right things this offseason, making moves to create more spacing for their two stars, and they said the right things in training camp. Ben Simmons told reporters that former teammate Josh Richardson, quote, was definitely right when Richardson said there wasn't enough accountability in Philadelphia last year, and that since Doc arrived in town, Simmons said, quote, it's been great to see that and see guys be accountable for certain things and come here ready with a different mindset, unquote. Of course, those are all nice words, but now that the season has officially started, the games are what count. And last night against the Raptors, things did not start out well for the Sixers. Philadelphia trailed for most of the first half, shooting 29% from the field, just 22% from three. Meanwhile, on the other end of the floor, Toronto was getting so many good looks from three, you wondered if the Sixers arena staff had accidentally left a bunch of welcome mats out beyond the arc. There was also Kyle Lowry back in his hometown doing Kyle Lowry things. Yet slowly, as the game ground on, Philadelphia pushed its way through. Tobias Harris and Seth Curry both found their shots, combining for 18 points in the third quarter alone. Embiid persisted through an injury scare to finish with 29 points, 16 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 blocks, with a 14 of 16 performance at the line to boot. And the Sixers' defense buckled down hard, holding Toronto scoreless for nearly 4 minutes in the final frame to turn the game for good. Now, this wasn't officially the game winner, but it felt like it. A nice Curry three on a pass from Embiid, where Curry was so wide open thanks to a triple team on Joel. The Sixers' updated roster construction working exactly like it's supposed to there. So what does it all mean? Should we be thinking this is finally the year that Embiid has a legit place in the MVP discussion? Should we be worried about Simmons still being predictable in the half court? Or should we be noting his defensive versatility as a marker of the Sixers being able to eke out more gritty wins like this one? Or should we not draw any conclusions at all? Sure, it was only just one game. But in this city, in this season, that means more than it ever has. So Perk, seeing as how that was just one game last night, they're just a few games in, are you buying the Sixers' roster tweak so far?
I am buying it. The thing that the Sixers were missing was spacers and guys that could shoot the lights out of the ball. You look at a guy like Danny Green. You look at a guy like Seth Curry, who I think just get props for shooting the ball. But Rachel, he's a hell of a basketball player. He's an underrated defender. He's an underrated playmaker. And then when you look at the structure of that team, just think about this. Tobias Harris was having one of the best seasons of his career with the Clippers under Doc Rivers. And Joel Embiid, I love what Doc Rivers is going to do for Joel, and what he's doing for Joel is he's holding them accountable, not on the offensive end, but on the defensive end. And it's a ripple effect. So when you can hold Joel accountable, not Ben Simmons is saying, you know what? I could play for Doc. I could go out here and lay it all out on the line. I love the way this team is structured. I think they're moving in a great direction. And last year, this time, if they were down at halftime like they were to the Raptors, I don't know if we would have seen this same fight. But since Doc Rivers is there, one thing I know about Doc, his halftime speeches are going to be on point, and he's also going to get guys to rally back and play together, and that's what we saw yesterday from the 76ers.
You know, from the start, when Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers got together there, they made it very clear that this was going to be a Joel Embiid-focused team. Everything that they've said and done has pointed to that. They haven't gone away from Ben Simmons, but they have really played to Joel. And those roster tweaks that you mentioned, Rachel, were about Joel. And if you watched this game last night, they ran their offense through the end of the game, through Joel Embiid, with high pick and rolls. In their opener, where they had a 10-point comeback victory over Washington in the fourth quarter, they ran that whole fourth quarter offense through Embiid in the post. And, you know, that is really what this is about. This is about giving Joel Embiid what he wants, which is the ball in his hands and control to be the kind of MVP candidate that he thinks he can be. The other thing is, Doc Rivers is putting no pressure on Ben Simmons on three-pointers. He has not taken a three-pointer yet. Last year, remember, Brett Brown publicly announcing,
yes,
Ben, we want you to shoot a three every game. Doc has not done that at all, and the roster changes allow him to take that pressure off of Ben, and this approach so far has him 3-1, and then the loss was when Embiid sat.
Do you feel like there is a point where they can see enough before the trade deadline that this is the group they're going to stick with? I should rephrase that, by the way, because Daryl Morey never sticks with exactly the same group, but stars-wise. Or do you think that there's a point where they're going to look more seriously at that James Harden trade that we know has been discussed?
So the Sixers have the player that the Rockets, I think, can, you know, that's probably the best deal that they can make right now, which is Ben Simmons. It's just a matter of constructing it in a way that satisfies both teams. If they really drilled down, they could probably get a deal done within a day or two. But neither one really are interested in doing that right now. And what the real question to me is there another team out there? Because we have a bunch of teams sort of packed together in the middle that tries to jump up and make an offer for Harden before Philadelphia comes to a final analysis in its mind. And right now, at 3-1, and Embiid and Simmons playing like this, I would say they're farther away from a Harden trade than they were 2 weeks ago.
Perk, what do you think? If you were Daryl, would you be looking to make that deal, or would you stand put with what you got?
I would stay put right now, Rachel. I would watch at least the first part of the season up until the trade deadline to see where the team is at. So I would keep an eye and I would monitor the situation. One thing about it is that you could never go wrong with trading for a guy like James Harden, an MVP guy that's right now that's like 10 to 12 pounds overweight and still averaging about 35 points a night. So, but with that being said, I wouldn't mess up the chemistry. Right now, I'm looking at this, watching this Philadelphia 76er team, and the chemistry is there. Mm-hmm. You have great leadership in this locker room between Danny Green and Dwight Howard, both guys that have won the championship and knows what it takes. So right now, the chemistry is there. Guys look like they love playing with one another. And most importantly, they know their roles. They know their roles. So I wouldn't mess with it, not right now.
All right, well, let's move on to another team built around its big man. Last night on national television, the Milwaukee Bucks beat the Miami Heat by 47 points. Now, to be fair, Jimmy Butler did not play for the defending Eastern Conference champs. Milwaukee did set a single game record, though, with 29 made threes. In fact, every active Bucks player except Giannis Antetokounmpo made at least one three in this game. Now, the Heat faced the Bucks again today. Their Twitter account showed a little humor, posting this graphic this morning with the caption, "Taking on the Bucks tonight for the first time this season." Brian, it's like it never happened, right? And I did see this morning that Jimmy Butler not expected to play in this game either, Brian. So do you feel like you learned anything from yesterday or even from tonight's game without Jimmy or not? It's just another night.
Rachel, we finally found something that the pandemic cured. It cured the Miami flu. I've never seen a team come out in Miami and shoot like this. If you take away Giannis, the starters shot 18 of 25 on threes. Now, I will submit that that is arguably one of the greatest shooting performances in the history of the NBA, not just on volume, but on percentage. So this is probably the best shooting performance we will see throughout the entire year. So I'm not going to focus on the spread of 47 points or the Heat. But what I will point out is this Bucks team is heavily reliant on production from its starting lineup. We have seen that in just these first few games. When the starters play well, they are awesome. Their bench remains suspect. And so what I take away from this is a reinforcing of, boy, the Bucks starters are really, really good. But what happens when they need some of their bench? That's what we're going to watch as the season goes along.
Well, I agree with you, Brian. But here's the key factor of this. Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton has been playing some outstanding basketball. And last night, he was on fire. But I'm going to go back to this. We're seeing all these blowouts. This is why the NBA, this is why the players need fans. This is why fans are so important. Help guys rally back. They give guys this energy. Just imagine, the Miami Heat got blown out at home. If it was a crowd in the stands to help them rally back and go on those 10-0 runs or those 15-2 runs, the game would have got close, but you have to find that energy without fans in the stands, and it is a unique situation, and guys going to have to overcome it. But I expect it's going to be a lot of blowouts this season.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit more later. You mentioned the Miami flu, Brian. I think Damian Lillard said the other night before they played against the Lakers that there wasn't anything he could go out and do in L.A. like he normally would the night before. We may see some teams lose this home court advantage in ways we didn't expect this season. We'll see. All right, guys, coming up, Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook. They played well, but the Wizards dropped to 0-4 last night. What is going on in the nation's capital? You know we're going to talk about that. All right, guys, I want to get to a couple players who are familiar with making highlight reels. Bradley Beal, Russell Westbrook. Both players have experienced success individually. Beal ranking third in scoring at 32 points a game so far this season. Westbrook logged a triple-double in all three of his games. But that has not translated into winning yet, as the Wizards fell to 0-4 last night. Following the home loss to the Bulls, Russell Westbrook posted this on Instagram with a caption quoting Martin Luther King Jr., quote, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy." So, Perk, I know you were high on the Wizards entering this season. You said they're making the playoffs. What is wrong with the way they're getting off to this start?
Well, I tell you what, it's nothing to do with them offensively. Right now, the Washington Wizards can't guard senior citizens at a nursing home at recess. They are just horrible on the defensive end. And it starts with Russ and Bradley Beal, the two captains, the two franchise guys. They have to set the tone, because right now, teams are getting whatever they want on the Washington Wizards on offensively. So defensively, they have to step it up. They have enough offensive power to score points. They're going to do that. But they got to start playing some defense and hanging their hats on the defensive end. And me knowing Scottie Brooks, he is not pleased right now. He's going to drill them in film, and they're going to pick it up. I'm not going to panic. They're going to pick it up on the defensive end. And by the way, they're going to get Rui Hachimura back, which will be huge for them, and they'll be okay.
Yeah, I know that their defense has got to improve, but the other thing is Westbrook, he has good overall numbers, but his offensive efficiency has plummeted. Hmm. His shooting is way down from where it has been. He's averaging 8 less points a game than he did last year in Houston. He's taking so many mid-range shots. The spacing is off. He is not getting to the foul line. He's getting the foul line 3.5 times less than he did last season. Scott Brooks has been looking at different lineup changes. They are not getting efficient production out of Russell Westbrook. And that has got to be something you have, especially if you don't have a very good defense. And he did, Scott Brooks did change the starting lineup in the second half last night. And he put Davis Bertans out there with Westbrook trying to get more spacing. But it's not working. Westbrook has got to be more on the attack, and they've got to help him do that. And I'll tell you what, if Scottie Brooks doesn't get that aligned and fixed, we're going to start hearing rumblings because this team is under pressure to win immediately with the Westbrook trade and Bradley Beal's contract situation.
And that's what I was going to ask. And I hate asking this question. Everyone around the league is so fond of Scottie Brooks, but how hot is that seat given that Washington as a franchise has made it clear they want Bradley Beal there for the duration? But Bradley's made it clear he does eventually need to start winning.
Well, Ted Leonsis has never been a guy who's got a hair trigger finger. He's always supported his coaches and general managers, maybe even to a fault, both with the Capitals and with the Wizards. It's not something he likes to do. But Scottie Brooks is on the last year of his contract, and that's well known. And the competition for the eighth seed is going to be very tight in the East. I mean, one of the teams I expect them to have to deal with for that eighth seed is Orlando. And Orlando, 1 week into the season, has a four-game lead on them already. And so that's just a reality of this season, and we're going to wait and watch. But Scott Brooks is under some pressure. Forget about his job. He's under some pressure to make some lineup changes in the short term here to turn this around.
Well, I think, you know, Scottie will make the adjustments, and I agree. He is under pressure to win games. But you have to realize that guys have to get accustomed to playing with one another. Russ didn't really play in the preseason. Bradley Beal didn't play that much in the preseason. So they have to – guys are starting to come back in. Bertans didn't play in the preseason. And now Rui Hachimura is just coming back. So once they get the feel of playing with each other, and that's why I want to go back to your point, Brian, when you were saying about Rush being not being efficient, when you watch the Wizards game, it seemed like he's trying to get everyone involved and trying to show the world that he's the ultimate team guy instead of being aggressive. It's times that I was yelling at the TV saying, attack, attack, attack. But he was trying to be so unselfish and get everyone going instead of just being Russell Westbrook, and that's playing downhill, playing with a high motor and being aggressive and putting pressure on other teams' defense.
I'm trying to picture Perk in his living room yelling, attack, attack, attack at the TV, and I'd be scared if I was walking by on the street. Brian mentioned the Orlando Magic. We're going to talk about them later in the show. Also coming up, as he turns 36 years old today, in year 18 for LeBron James, how much longer can he remain elite? Another 10 years, 20 years, 40 years? We'll discuss that next, right here on The Jump. Next week, it's our first star-studded NBA Wednesday doubleheader of the season on ESPN and the app. Jason Tatum and the Celtics are in Miami to take on the Heat at 7:30 Eastern. And then you got Kawhi, Paul George, and the Clippers squaring off against Steph and the Warriors. But today, the Lakers are playing on the day LeBron James turns 36. And here is LeBron on why he enjoys playing on his birthday.
I've been very fortunate to play some games on my birthday. And, this will be another opportunity for me to play the game that I love and also just celebrate another year of existence. Coming from where I come from, you know, a lot of people don't even make it, you know, past 21. You know, so, you know, for me to be, you know, rounding the base to 36 and playing the game that I love to play and being with a great team and a great organization, just very blessed and very honored. And I'm happy to be, like I said, doing what I love to do.
That shiny ring sure makes it nice. And yeah, LeBron is now 36 years old. Nearly half of his life has been as an NBA player. And if he plays today, which he is scheduled to, it will be the eighth time he's played on December 30th in the NBA. So we found great plays from LeBron on his birthday.
Bullet pass to Z, wide open. Oh, rebound crushed by LeBron.
Well, he liked that one. He let out that little rebel yell there after he slammed that one down there.
Complete with a cake, candles, and they all blow it out for the 25th birthday of King James.
He moved their feet on defense.
Now Shaq against Josh Smith, the double team. LeBron James burning after rubber as he headed down the lane.
What? The big fella waiting for LeBron to make his move. Throws the hammer down the king on his birthday.
LeBron with a steal, a breakaway.
Oh! Having fun on his birthday. And LeBron, put some mustard on it on your birthday, baby. There you go.
Now, Brian, those were his best NBA birthday plays, but did you see one during his high school days you were telling our producers about?
Yeah. The day he turned 17, he played in a tournament in Lewis, Delaware. The slam dunk to the beach had one of the most amazing plays of his career when he forced overtime with a four-point play at the buzzer. Buzzer-beating four-pointer, got fouled, made the free throw, lost in overtime. But we won't bring that up. One of the great plays of his life.
Amazing. All right, Perk, as someone who just turned 36 yourself, how much longer can you see LeBron playing like the LeBron we've seen play all these years?
Well, it's crazy, Rachel. Braun and I came out of high school together, the same high school class, same draft class, and here I am starting my next career. We the same age. He's still going in year 18. To be honest, I can see him going another 6 years at this level. He already has the genes, and now he's invested $2 million into his body. Mm-hmm. I'm really jealous. I wish he have a horrible birthday. I wish him nothing but the worst today.
Perk.
If he avoids injury, there's no end in sight. His mind is in an amazing place. His body's in an amazing place. Long live the king.
It really has been incredible to watch. And my advice for anyone betting against LeBron is keep your money, because every year so far, that has been a losing bet. Boy, look at those numbers as he has gotten older. And the mileage on him, too. It's not just the years or the minutes played. It's the games played. It's the year after year after year without a substantive offseason. And he's ready to go at it again after the shortest offseason in NBA history. All right, guys, let's switch over to the Grizzlies, because they announced Tuesday that Ja Morant is going to miss 3 to 5 weeks with a grade 2 ankle sprain. We knew it wasn't going to be good right after we saw him landing awkwardly in the second quarter of Monday's win against the Nets. Looking at the Grizzlies' schedule moving forward, let's say Ja only misses 3 weeks, right? Like, let's say we're on the smaller end of that prediction. That would mean 11 games out, including matchups with the Celtics, Nets, Sixers, and twice against the Lakers. Now, if his recovery takes 5 weeks, and we've talked on this show that the Grizzlies are going to be careful with him, well, he could miss 7 more games on top of those, including a back-to-back against Portland. So seeing specifically what the Grizzlies are facing now, Brian, how do they stay afloat in the West while Ja recovers, or can they?
Yeah, you know, without Jaren Jackson, this is a devastating blow, and especially because that injury was so severe. I think they were lucky he avoided a third-degree ankle sprain, which would have put him out for months. This was actually a fortunate would come out of it. And I don't know, the Grizz are probably a player away from being a serious contender, and considering where the draft class is, it might not be the worst thing in the world to just kind of shut it down a little bit. They don't even really have much of a choice. Their two best players are out indefinitely. And I know this is going to be frustrating for the Grizzlies because they had such momentum going into the season, but they might end up okay going into the lottery, and maybe even investigating whether there are players on their roster that they could maybe trade even to get some more assets. It's not something that you want to talk about, but I definitely think that's something they should look at and start looking at next season, which is, I know it's December, hard to say it, but could be the best long-term play.
Oh.
So basically, Brian, what you're saying, in Perk's words, is that the Grizzlies are dead bird tall grass, and they are. And Rachel, you know how much I love Ja Morant. Like, he's one of my favorite players. I think he will be an MVP in the near future, and he was on the rise, in my opinion, of making the All-Star game. Losing him hurts them tremendously. I honestly, in this upcoming schedule, the games that you just named that they have to, the teams that they have to face, I don't see them winning the game. And so I love Dylan Brooks, and I'm with Brian on this one. With Ja being hurt, don't rush him back. And it might turn out for a good thing because they might end up in the lottery and getting a young stud in the draft and look forward to next season.
I know what you guys are saying makes sense, but it is hard to adjust your thinking in just the second week of the season. A team that definitely had playoff hope, saw itself in the bracket there, at least in making the play-in game. And that is competitive. That is a competitive group of guys. It's a competitive franchise. I understand it might be smart to start looking through the future, especially if Ja ends up missing 18 games. But gosh, it's going to be hard to tell Ja Morant the best thing isn't for him to win when he gets back. I wouldn't want to be the one having that conversation with him. So we'll see where they go. Right. All right, much more coming up on this show. Here's what The Jump recommends for today. Royce Young digging deep into the growing beef between Damian Lillard and Paul George, from the wave to the bubble laughter. There's even an Al Capone reference in this piece. You got to go look it up and then stick with us. We'll be back right after this commercial. These are the last two bowl games, and they're on ESPN and the app Saturday. 4 Eastern, Oregon takes on Iowa State in the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl. And then it's Texas A&M and North Carolina in the Capital One Orange Bowl at Hard Rock Stadium. As far as I know, no mayonnaise vats being dumped on anyone in those games either. What are you going to do? It's crunch time here on The Jump. Julius Randle had a triple-double for the Knicks in their win over the Cavs last night. Mm. Brian, has Randle turned a corner in New York?
Well, it was an amazing start to the season for him. Guys, he's averaging 7.5 assists per game so far. He's only averaged as much as 3 in his career. He's playing point forward for the Knicks. This is not something we saw in Julius Randle's game. I have no idea whether this is going to last, but if he decides to play this way going forward, he's going to be a completely different threat to deal with.
Okay. Mm. Not bad.
Well, I agree, Brian, but listen, what we have to realize, Rachel, Julius Randle have been a guy that's been putting up 20 and 10 for a while now. He's just been under the radar because he haven't been in winning situations. But he's a guy that's capable of getting 20 and 10. Now he's upping his assists and making others better. I think the sky's the limit. He's been one of my favorite players for a long time, and now he's getting to show that because I'm saying it. Yes, the Knicks are finally moving in the right direction.
I've heard that before, Kendrick Perkins. I do agree. There's a difference, though, that he's been putting up some numbers. But there's a difference between putting up stats on a team that's not winning and making your whole game more well-rounded and being more of a threat, which is certainly what we're seeing right now. All right, I want to get to the Magic. Shout out to my friend George Galante down there, because the Magic are undefeated at 4-0 after beating the Thunder last night in OKC. The Magic have won 3 of their 4 games on the road as well. So, Perk, is this the year that we say the Magic are a playoff team? Not just a playoff team, because they've been in, but a threat in the playoffs. Maybe win a little in the play-in round or something like that.
They are a threat, Rachel, and I'm so disappointed in myself because I slept on the Magic. Steve Clifford, he is a hell of a coach. He hangs his hat on the defensive end. He preached ball movement offensively. They pass up good shots to get great shots. And Ross, Terrence Ross, has been killing it for them off the bench. I love the way the Magic play. They're not the most sexiest team to watch, but they get the job done.
Yeah, Markel Fultz just had another fantastic game for them. The crazy thing about this team is that they were considering trading Aaron Gordon right in the offseason. They were considering trading Evan Fournier in the offseason. They really weren't sure which way they were going to go. Then they go into the season, extend a couple of their guys for big money, and now they're playing well. And here's the thing. I know it's just 4 games, but like I said before, the number 8 playoff seed is going to be an all-out fight. Getting off to this start is really going to help them as they try to sneak into the back end of those playoffs.
Yes, but we'd like to see them maybe win more than a game in the opening round of the playoffs, too, and make a statement. And it feels like they're on the path to something a little bit more this year. We'll have to see if it pans out. All right, there are 6 NBA games scheduled this Wednesday as we look into the league pass game of the night. So we've got LeBron's birthday game in San Antonio, but NBA TV also showing Bucks Heat after their record-setting encounters last night, as well as Blazers Clippers. So who should we pick as our League Pass game of the night? It can't be a national TV team. Oh, look, it's Hawks-Nets. Atlanta's undefeated. Ooh. They're taking a major step up in competition, though, tonight against the Nets. KD and Kyrie expected to play. Perk, expect the Hawks to hang with the Nets in Brooklyn tonight.
Absolutely. You have Trae Young on your squad, you're going to be in the game. If I had to give out an MVP award for week one, he would get it, Rachel. He's playing phenomenal basketball. Right now, Trae Young is a top five player in the league, and I expect him to go out there and do it against the Nets tonight.
He's doing some James Harden stuff, doing little trickerations now his third year in the league, getting to the line. He got to the line 15 times. He's so good at the line, it's an automatic 2 points. Watch Kyrie Irving attack him tonight and him go back at Kyrie. I want to see a good old-fashioned slugfest. Those two guys gunning for 40. That's what we want to see on League Pass Game of the Night.
Rachel, he want to see Wendy and Zach Lowe at the YMCA going back and forth that pickup. That's how they be battling it out. That's what we're going to see tonight.
I would really pay a lot of money, Kendrick Perkins, to see that game. I think America would. So, Brian, if you can just call Zach and organize that in the next few days, maybe not during COVID, but soon. Maybe we'll just do it in a few months. That's something to look forward to. Thanks to Perk and Brian for joining me. Jump back tomorrow
to
Eastern on ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.